Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how you doing? This is the beginning of the most important week of the year, Thanksgiving, where we appreciate everything we have and are grateful for all the treasures that have come our way.
We do have so much to be thankful for, and I can begin that with family. This week, we're going to work a little bit today and tomorrow, and then me and my family, mom, dad, brothers, nephews, nieces, we're all headed to Disney World to go faux camping.
Flamping.
We're going flamping.
What do they call it? There's a word for this.
Kevin doesn't know, but I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have low country boil as opposed to the traditional
Thanksgiving. You're boiling up a turkey?
I forget that you're from the north, really. Anything south of Lake City is the north again.
Yes.
No, a low country boil involves seafood and corn and potatoes and sausage and onions. And I'm sure we'll find some turkey, but that's not the main. Our guest today, he knows very well what low country boil is all about. And we are more than thankful to have our guest today. We have back with us in the Business Radio X studio today, Dr. Jack Phillips. He's accomplished a thing or two in his arena, including he's done a thing or two in the world of consulting. He's got a new book out, How to Build a Successful Consulting Practice, and that's the topic of today's very special segment. It's all about the consulting profession. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. This is my favorite topic here.
So I understand not only are you just out trying to support people that you've come to know over the years and share some of your insight and wisdom, but you've actually built a very concerted effort toward doing something structured and to apply some rigor to this business of even deciding if you should even be a consultant all the way through how to be a good one.
That's true. Now, here's the problem. About 80% of new consultants, independent consultants, fail in the first 2 years. It's the highest failure rate of any professional occupation. So we try to help people prevent that. And we know there's a lot of concerns and issues, and there's a lot of myths about consulting. So we just try to help people clarify that. And we actually apply that to our own business as well. Our business is made up of about 100 consultants, and most of those, by far the vast majority of those, are independent consultants. And so we wrote our first book in consulting in 2006, and we've written several others since. And we did that also to help our own team to become great, top-quality, and high-paid consultants.
Now, before we get really far into this, can we just define some terms? Like, for me, a consultant, I'm not clear on what that means. And there's a lot of people maybe that were corporate executives and they're unemployed now and they're like, well, I'm not unemployed, I'm a consultant. You know, like, so can we define what a consultant is and why someone would want to be one?
Yes, we probably can put the actual activities into three different boxes, but sometimes people define a consultant as a person who will borrow your watch and then tell you what time it is. So it does have some stigma and maybe stereotyping around it, but sometimes a consultant is there just to give advice, and they've got lots of experience, and they can help people with issues that they're so familiar with. And so that's probably a classic kind of consulting. Another consultant would go in and actually conduct a study, a project, or do something for you. It's maybe solve a problem or to do a market study or do something as a consulting group maybe would do, or team. And then the third, it's a combination of maybe teaching and advice together. Sometimes it's just teaching. Sometimes trainers call themselves consultants because they like to think that what they're teaching you is something that they've decided you need through some kind of needs assessment and needs analysis. And they're delivering that, and they're perhaps staying with you to make sure it works. So sometimes trainers calls themselves consultants.
What about coach?
Well, coaching is very similar, but a coach is someone who's probably there more for advice. They're not going to do projects on their own. So the advice portion of a consultant is very similar to a coach, but a coach is usually not quite as involved in your business as much as a consultant. And a consultant is probably a person that would be doing a one-off project for the most part. A coach may be with you for some time. And it's also getting into the behavioral issues for the most part and understanding your weaknesses and try to overcome those weaknesses and keep building on your strengths. So there's certainly some overlap in the two.
So you were talking earlier about independent consultants, and you have this big network of independent consultants. It strikes me that in addition to being good at your craft, you have to have the ability to market yourself. You got to get somebody to buy your services, even if you are really good at what you do.
Yes, and that's probably where one major reason consultants fail is how do I market what I do? And first, it has to start from having a particular niche. You have to know something or be able to do something quite well, or otherwise you wouldn't want to be offering your services. But the key is to find the niche, something that you have a passion about, something you really like to do and want to do. And that's so critical to be a consultant, just have a passion about what you're doing. But that's not enough. You've got to have something that people really want and they're willing to buy and have some understanding of how we might get to them in the market. And third, how do we plan to actually develop that into a profitable business? And that gets the heart of your question. I'd like to put that into this context. We call it client development. And we think a consultant, in addition to providing consulting services, ought to do four things. One is that they should teach. That is, if it's feasible and practical, and most consulting processes would be in this category, that's something you can teach people what you do. That is, you actually conduct workshops showing people what is it you do. And sometimes a consultant is hesitant to do that because they say, if I'm teaching them what I do, they won't call me. But if you're good enough at it, you're only teaching them a little bit of what you know, and there's much, much more if you come hire my services. So consulting connects to teaching. And the second thing we want you to do besides consulting and teaching, the second thing besides teaching is to speak. You got to speak to groups. Business groups, professional groups, chapters, national conferences, speak. Get out there. That's your best business development, is making these appearances. Sometimes they don't pay for that. Sometimes they do, but get out there and speak. So now it's teaching and speaking. Also, and this is uncomfortable for some, and that's writing. You got to write a book. The best consultants are usually people who have documented what they do in a book. It's not that difficult to write a book, even if you self-publish it. But ideally to get publishers that are well-respected, well-known. And it's not that difficult. And we actually try to help people write the books because we've written a lot of them ourselves. Writing, but not just the book, maybe an article, a case study, maybe a blog or something, but writing is critical. And we suggest one more thing to be the fourth thing, and that's research and what you're doing. So you want to understand this market so well that you're in, that you'd collect all kinds of benchmarking and research data to show what are the issues. You're really making a case to use you and your organization to maybe address some of the issues that you're finding out in the research. So in summary, in addition to consulting, we want to teach, speak, write, and do research.
Now, of your day, what percentage of your day should be done in each of those elements?
Well, we almost have to force ourselves to do all five of them. It's a good question. I would just take my situation. I'd look at it this way. Probably 50% of my day is consulting. Mm-hmm. And we have some consultants that we suggest that should be as high as 60%. And then I spend probably, I've got to get my numbers to add up here, maybe 20% teaching. Doing workshops, even doing a five-day ROI certification because our business is basically about ROI. And then maybe 10% on the other three things, 10% writing and 10% speaking,
And researching.
And researching, yes. Thank you.
Well, in the researching, it strikes me, and this may be true in all four categories, but it strikes me with this researching, your clients and even your prospects and your colleagues, they'll help you with that work if you let them, because they'll want to participate just in elevating the knowledge base around the topic. You can make a lot of friends conducting research if you go about it right, can't you?
Yes. It's a great business development tool. It not only gives you information about what you should do for planning your own business and the gaps that you see and the issues you should address, but you're bringing in clients, because one of the best ways to collect the data is to go to the audience, collect that data, and promise to give them a copy of the report. And you can also sell the report if you want to, but many consulting firms give away those research papers, white papers they may call them, because of just that. They're building clients. They're keeping their own clients, but they're also finding new clients, and they're willing to help you with this.
Now, is consulting, is that a team sport or is that an individual sport?
It can go both ways. Now, it's a good question, because so many people want to be a consultant, and they're quite good at what they do, and they have expertise, and they start working, and they get a client base, and they're quite busy, but they say, hey, I'm doing well. So if I had a whole team of, you know, maybe 10 of these, just like me, we could really do well. Now, that's a transition that's tough for an independent.
Because that's a different business now, right?
It is. Just because you're quite good doesn't mean that they're going to be just the same and they want to do it the same way. So you really have to have standards, and you have to develop them to do things the way you want them to do, is be as brilliant and great and good as you are. And so that takes so much time away from what you're doing. So you can see the dilemma. You're losing your own revenues working with these consultants, only to be disappointed sometimes because they don't do it so well. And when they get quite good, they often leave you and compete with you. Right.
So now when the premise of your book, How to Build a Successful Consulting Practice, does that mean for an individual and just build a robust practice for themselves as an individual? Or is it to put that team around them and it's kind of a whole ecosystem unto itself?
Well, this book actually covers the gamut. First, if someone is thinking about consulting, the first chapter in this book tries to talk them out of it.
You want them to self-select out, right?
Exactly.
Because the failure rate's so high, right?
It is. Everybody wants to be, you know, there's some misunderstandings about the consulting business. They think, hey, you make a lot of money, you can be your own boss, you set your own schedule, and you can play golf whenever you want to. Those are all myths, obviously. So we try to talk them out of it. But if you go into it, it says, here's what you need to make it work. Start with a business plan, you know, have the niche, and follow right on through from the financial and client development and so forth. But it's written primarily for those who want to do this, who are not there yet. But it also is very helpful with people in the already in the business, and it helps them fine-tune what they have. We've put our information out in different ways with different books, but there's a particular chapter on building blocks for client development. It basically takes those five things that we do, consulting, writing, speaking, and teaching, and doing research. And it shows how you can apply that and build your business around those building blocks. So the reaction to that, to get back to your point, a lot of existing consultants says we've been able to really ramp up our business with those ideas. And so it helps both current businesses. What it doesn't address necessarily is very large consulting businesses. They're probably not going to pick this book up and go with it. They've pretty well developed already. We do have some books that can help them. For example, one of our books with McGraw-Hill, same publisher, is called The Consultant Scorecards. Scorecard. It's a book that tracks the return on investment and impact of consulting projects. And it's developed for both the consultants who want to make their projects accountable to executives, clients. Then it's a client guide to make sure that your consultant
is accountable. Yeah, I can see why a client would want that book.
Well, I can see why a person selling consulting services would want to be able to bring that into the conversation when they're addressing, when they're responding to an RFP, or even if they're in the boardroom. I would, you know, that would be very helpful to have, right?
But then that's going to hold them accountable.
It is.
Are consultants, do they like to be held accountable typically?
No, for the most part, no. particularly the big ones, they will talk about it, but not really deliver it in terms that the typical CEO and CFO would want to see. They work off relationships. They work off of chemistry. They work off their reputation, and they don't want to have an ROI equation getting in their way. But a smaller consulting firm and a growing consulting firm, hey, this is your best business development. It's to show that you drive value and deliver value. When we talk about delivering value, it's not just an ROI calculation, but it's showing how well this is working in your organization and the impact it's delivering, and then the financial ROI, and then the intangible. So you're getting a range of measures of value. So that's a huge strategic advantage. So we've worked with some small and medium-sized consulting firms and helped make a difference in how they grow their business, because they grow on value add. Value add in terms that a chief financial officer would appreciate.
Now, new consultants, do they typically struggle with how to set their fees? I would think that could be a bit of a challenge, not even knowing where to begin with fee structure.
Yes, that's probably one of the toughest issues. We've actually laid out some schedules in this book to give you some suggestions. They're notoriously, you got some issues, but notoriously a new consultant will be underpaid because they are new. They don't have a reputation yet. And there's some pretty low fees that sometimes they're asked to work with. So we like to put it into three categories. First, we suggest you wouldn't be consulting unless you're experienced at something, whatever it is you're delivering. So it's kind of an entry-level fee, and we'd like to put $1,000 a day on that consulting. Now, we know some people will take less than that to get started, but that's a good fare rate for someone who's got some expertise who can deliver that.
And that's based upon you have been in this business for a long time and seeing what people pay.
Yes.
Right? This isn't just a number out of thin air.
No, this is our own network as well. But then move it to the next level. And that's a level of you've been experienced, you've got several years of consulting, maybe 5 years. You can probably push that up to around $2,000 a day for the consulting. And so we want most of our consultants to be in that range. Then it's another category, and that's what we call the expert. You really have a following. You've got great projects behind you. You've got a great history. Those expert rates are usually $4,000 to $5,000 a day. Then there is another one that we can sometimes charge, at least some of us, if you considered one of the best, if not the best, in your profession. That's after you've got a couple of books, maybe, and you're speaking in large conferences, and you write lots of articles. There you want to.
And you've been on Atlanta Business Radio.
Exactly. I mean,
you got to check boxes like that.
At least three times. This is my third time. So there you can charge $10,000 and up. Some of the real gurus charge $100,000. But that's unusual.
Now, do you tie the rate to what other people charge, or do you tie the rate to what value you're imparting on the organization?
Well, that's a great question. Now, first, we try to look at market. Market data is hard to come by sometimes for independent consulting. Now, you like to tie it. You can't be too much out of the market, particularly if you're early in this process. So you've got to be conscious of that. And we know in some countries, we work in 60 countries with our consultants. In some countries, that rate is quite low because of the exchange rate between the dollar and their particular currency. And it's just not in the market. The market doesn't bear this quite well. It doesn't justify it. So we like to go with market averages. But a unique approach, and we encourage it, and we still see some people doing it, is to put your fee at risk. And that is, if I can meet some goals, if I can get you some results that you appreciate, then you pay me this rate. If I can exceed that, you're going to pay me a portion of the money that I'm generating for you. So it's a bonus on top of my rate. But if I don't meet that,
then you're getting a below market rate,
or getting zero.
Or zero. Wow. Yeah, so you got to be pretty confident to pull that off, right?
Hey, that's a trend. And one of our books, it's called Consultant's Guide to results-based business proposals. And it's as a subtitle of how to forecast the impact in ROI. It's another McGraw-Hill book. We work with McGraw-Hill in the consulting business as a publisher. Now, in that book, we advocate, in one of the chapters, success guarantees from consulting. And we work with several firms to do that. One of those was SAP, the world's largest business software company. They were facing this issue of when they put a large enterprise-wide system in place, they always forecasted the ROI. That's how they sell it. But then during the recession, some of their clients were saying,
we didn't make our numbers.
That's right. So we don't think we should pay you. And so they wanted a guarantee going in. If you don't have the forecast that you give me, we don't pay you. And so obviously that's a frightening proposition there when you've got several million dollars fees at stake. So what they had to do is make sure that their guarantee is designed around certain conditions. And they basically define what does a perfect implementation look like.
Right.
And we put this in with some very measurable things at each point. If you violate any of those conditions, hey, the guarantee is void now.
Right.
And that's not a bad process because you can see the client then wants to not void the contract, the guarantee. So they step up and do the things that they need to do, have the right people in place, the support that's needed, and so forth. So it's really a great process, and I would recommend it. It's frightening for some, but if you structure it properly, you can get there.
But on one side, you're betting on your methodology, right? If you follow my plan, all 10 steps, then you're going to achieve a certain level of success. But then the consultant is relying on that company to, number one, follow all the 10 steps, but also to execute them in the manner that the consultant envisions, right?
Right.
And there has to be a level of trust there because the consultant's trusting that the company is going to execute properly, and the company's betting that the consultant has given them a good roadmap to follow.
Right. Now, to protect the consultant, you'd want to define that execution very precisely. For a proper execution, it means these dates, these things will be done, these people will be involved, and it must have support from the right management group, and we define that support on a scale of 1 to 5 that we actually survey.
So it's a trust but verify plan here.
That's right. We trust each other, but let's have some data to make that decision.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, after hearing you explain it, it sounds much less risky than not doing that type of arrangement, because I think what is incredibly risky is if you go into a situation, you're providing consulting services, and you don't have that, I don't know what you call it, the human contract, that contract with the sponsor, the person that can pull the purse strings and allocate all the resources, if you don't have some kind of very clear arrangement with them about them doing their part, that's risky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So it does make a better situation.
Yeah.
If we can get consultants to really think about delivering that value, forecasting that value, and guaranteeing that value, you've really got a market. Now, a few have done that, not many. That's really an opportunity.
Because don't you find that in some organizations you get theoretical buy-in at a high level, and then quickly the relationship turns almost adversarial, that they're almost against you, and you're not really working as partners once the thing gets going, even though initially everybody's all in, I guess, in a honeymoon stage where they all sound, it sounds good, everything sounds good. But then it devolves into this kind of adversarial relationship at some point.
Yes, and that's very common. So what we have to do is to go from that excitement and enthusiasm and try to keep it during the project. Mm-hmm. And one way to do that is to have a real great plan in our own work. When we're doing an evaluation of a particular project or program, we plan it very precisely with a data collection plan, an ROI analysis plan, and a project plan of when things will be done. And so we define, make all those great decisions. We get the bio from the client, and it clearly defines who's doing what at what time. And we keep the enthusiasm going by routine follow-up, routine communication, showing where we are and what we need to do. When we see bad news coming, we give early indicators saying, hey, be prepared. We know what's going to happen if this thing is not working out so well. We're uncovering some things that you need to know about. So we prepare them instead of surprise them. sometimes it goes sour because you don't do those things I just described. You don't plan so carefully. You don't stay in touch with them. You deliver bad news, and it becomes a surprise. And they don't like you anymore, and they shoot the messenger. So we want to make sure we manage that bad news and manage the whole process, try to keep that enthusiasm there.
Consulting is a lot more work, I think, than maybe a lot of folks realize, which brings me back to something that was mentioned at the very top of the conversation. You actually invest some genuine energy in maybe at first trying to talk folks out of even pursuing this path, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So what kinds of things do you say or talk about just to sort of vet them that early on like that?
Yes. Well, we have a little assessment. This is, what's your perception of consulting? And so we have them go through this. And it gets into these things that we talked about in terms of, you know, the compensation and the freedom and that I no longer have a boss. And, you know, I could set my hours.
But aren't they trading one boss for, like, lots of bosses? Every client's your boss, right?
Every client's the boss. You've just changed from one boss to many bosses. And so, yes. And so we go through this assessment, and we see if they really see it, and often they don't. And so now we say, here's the reality. But just in the image of consulting, it's not a very good image. If you look at the Dilbert cartoon character, I mean, he goes after consultants probably more than any particular group of people, and in a very harsh way. And so sometimes the consultant profession doesn't have a good image. And so we go through this assessment, and then we paint the real picture. What's the reality? You know, the reality is that you will probably work harder than you ever have. By the way, the good news there is it's for your benefit and not someone else's. That's one way of justifying that. You do have many bosses now. Your time schedule is not set by you necessarily, but it's by projects you're working on and deadlines you have and client needs and when they need it. Patty and I both have canceled so many key trips that we wanted to take or vacations or holidays because there's something big going on with a client that we had to be there, sometimes even in another country. So the reality is your work-life balance can really suffer. And now you can build it up to the point where you can ease off on that later, but for the first few years, it's going to be completely different than what you perceive it to be. Now, that in itself sometimes turns people off and says, well, maybe I don't want this. And we say, good, let's don't do it, because you've just stopped something that will probably fail. But when we say, if we have people say, yes, but I want to go, I can do it. I understand. I see reality. I'm willing to accept reality. Now we help them. We first look at what are the success factors of consulting. You know, what's going to make a successful consultant? We work through about 10 or 12 of these. And now let's translate that into a document, and that's your business plan. And you've got to have a business plan. But it all starts from having that right niche, the passion. You've got to be doing something that you love to do and want to do, and you've got then to translate that into they're willing to pay for it and pay well for it, and then you can think about the market to get to that.
So, but part of that business plan is, like you said, is defining that niche that makes you different and special?
Yes.
Is that hard for people typically, or do they start out as generalists, like, because I don't want to miss any opportunity, and then maybe it's better if they were more specialists?
Yes.
Yeah, don't they walk in and say, oh, yeah, this is for everybody, and then you have to get them kind of
right, dialed
in?
They say, hey, I want to be creative. Well, let's narrow that down a little bit. I mean, you've got in doing what? So we look at it, work that you've done, work that you do, experiences you've had, things that you know how to do, you know, trying to understand what about those things are really energize you and keep you, I mean, you get excited about it and you want to do those things. And it's usually more than one. And we almost all of us have a range of things that we like to do. And there's a range of things that we don't like to do. And so we can sort that out. But then of those things you do, we'd like to take it another level. If you think about the classic Life is Good products that you see in the malls,
sure.
You know, they have like what you do, do what you like. I think it's the other way around. Do what you like what you do. Now, we add to that this profit from what you do, do good with your profits. In other words, you really ought to, you've got to do consulting that's going to give you a livelihood that you need. And there's some consulting that you could provide, but it's for nonprofits maybe, and they just don't pay as much. Maybe you can do that somewhere else and get more money and then help the nonprofits. And that's what we say, do good by your profits. So it's basically not only looking at something you like to do, but there's a good market for it and it's a good profitable market for it.
Now, how do you find out if there is a market for it? Like, say what I like to do is watch college football. You know? How do I know that someone's going to pay me to really enjoy college football?
Well, you take that watching, you when you watch it, you know so much, then you can write a blog, you can write an article, or write a column, eventually get on the business radio show and give the scores and insight, and you can work your way up. I'm sure that there's some people who probably know so much that they would make a great color analyst in a broadcast or even at a local.
So you got to kind of look at what you do and the strengths and the value and then try to match it up with where there's money.
Exactly.
And yeah. To the earlier point, you might even be well advised to not be a consultant on college football, but only the SEC. I mean, were you really, right? I mean,
right.
There's some magic to, look, this is what I do. I'm the best in the world at it. I'm one of the best. And that, like, if we were hiring a consultant, we might explore the idea of hiring a media consultant, but we're more likely to hire a business radio consultant, right? Just the more narrow, right. The better.
Give an example on that. The announcer for the University of Alabama football games and basketball is Eli Gohl. He's a fixture in Alabama with that team, but he's so good. He actually does NASCAR and he does hockey games as well, and so. But his passion started from when he was a teenager. He wanted to be an announcer at a hockey game. And this was a minor league hockey team in New York where he was. And he volunteered, says, I will, if you let me do this, you don't have to pay me. And so he did some announcing there at a very low-level hockey team. And at the end of the season, they paid him $120, which is not much, but... But it grew from there. But he really got into announcing. He's so good. If you ever listen to the University of Alabama broadcast, sometimes they're on ESPN radio. It's the game they pick up. He is so clear. He's so precise. And he remembers all those names and the details. And he just creates a story. And he's always got this going on. But he does that with his NASCAR work and his basketball and the hockey as well. And he's making millions a year because he's got books and restaurants now, and he does all of these announcing great, marvelous contracts. But he started from, this is something I want to do. And he knew it would turn into money, but he's got to get the experience first.
Right, so he aligned his passion, and he aligned it with the marketplace, and then he went deep with it, and then lots of opportunities bubbled up in ways that he couldn't have imagined when he first started, but he was willing to pay the price in terms of, I'm not going to get top dollar today as I'm learning. He knew that, and he kind of did a deep dive and became an expert at that. Or do you believe of that 10,000 hours, that like you need so many hours of doing something in order to master it?
I do. I really think that you can do a lot of things well, but you cannot be a master at everything or at so many. You're going to have to really take the time. And this has been something that we practice in our own organization. We're celebrating our 20th year now. And in the very beginning, we had some opportunities maybe to do some other things other than what we do because some clients were very impressed with us. But we resisted that. We said, we're going to develop the expertise and be the world's best at what we do. And we are. There's no organization that can help you show the value of any projects or program any better than we do.
You decided to go all in on this. You wanted to be the best in the world. And that, by being heads down in this area, that meant that you had to choose not to do lots of other things.
Exactly. And it was painful early on.
Because there's opportunity, revenue. You're like, I'm passing up revenue. because I want to be the best here. Because if I put some of my energy over here, then I'm not spending 24/7 in this ROI area.
Yes. We still get those kinds of diversion opportunities.
Temptations.
And we have to just say, no, this is not our business. Let's don't do it. And our consultants say, look, I can go develop a leadership development program. This organization wants me to do that. Now, if it's a consultant on our team that isn't on our payroll, we'd say, I'm sorry. Yes, you could do it. And yes, that would be revenue. And your client would love you. And then you'll do more of that. And you're taking time away from this. So it is a struggle. But I think you got to do it and become that master that you need to be.
When you got here this morning and we were getting ready to go on air a few minutes before, you must have taken a half a dozen books out of your briefcase. So this whole writing thing, you guys have cracked the code on writing the book. Speak more of that, if you will, both your experience and what counsel, if any, you might have for someone who may not have written a book yet.
Yes. Well, we do. We have over 100 books now. We work with the major publishers. And it dates back to 1983, our first book, and it's now celebrating its 30th year as it goes into the fourth edition. But we write 8 or 10 books a year, and we'll come on the show sometime in the future and talk about how to write a book, but let me just look at that now as an issue. It's, again, you work off of your expertise, and you want to check the market and see if there's something already written about it. It could be that there is and there's no need to do it. Or maybe there is, but you've got a different twist or turn. But you don't want to go in to write a book if there's something already written. And there's easy ways to do that. If you just go to Amazon.com, but you can go to books.com, booksinprint.com, and find out if there's a book in this area. If not, you can begin to write the book. And we suggest this. Write a detailed outline. You know, what would you include on this book? And keep working on that outline to get it to the point where you think it might be doable or presentable. Then you write a book proposal. And a proposal depends on the publisher, but the proposal would show basically a description of the book, but the need for the book, how this book meets that need, and what are the competing books, and how this book competes. Is different from the competing books, and how you will market that book. These days, your publisher wants you to be a co-marketing person or be the principal marketing person for the book. A bestseller doesn't get there these days unless the author gets behind it in a variety of ways. So then you go to the bookstore and find out who's publishing this kind of book, who is actually in this space. And then you go to their website, get their guidelines,
because they have their niches too, right? They do. Different publishers focus on different genres.
Right. You're more likely to get ahead if you go to someone's already published in this space, and then follow their guidelines, tune your proposal, and go for it. Now, it helps to have someone you know publishing there if you happen to know that. We help a lot of people get into the publishers because we work with the largest publishers, John Wiley, McGraw-Hill, Elsevier are three large publishers. We're in all three of those in a big way. But we also work through some associations, ASTD, as you guys support quite well. We have 43 books with ASTD.
Wow.
And we've got contracts for three more. One will be delivered this year. So we expect to have 50 books with them in about a couple of years. So that's a huge milestone for one publisher. But they've been a good partner. The first one of those was 1994. So we'd be happy if any listeners want to know more about how to write a book. We got some materials we can send to them following the outlines that we just talked about. But there's often it's the mental issue here, the writer's block. Facing a blank page, you know, what would I put on that page? But it's really starting with what you know and start making it some outline. Looking at other books that are similar, get some great ideas. It is not that difficult. You have to look at it on a piecemeal basis. That is, you might write a page a day. But if you write a page a day, it takes less than a year, and you've got it done. But we work off of detailed outlines. We actually dictate books and have someone transcribe them, and we edit them. And this is why we get 8 or 10 out per year. But that's not our principal business.
It's really to help, but it does fuel. It helps your business, right? By supporting your consultants.
Exactly. It's our best business development we can do. We get so much business off our books, particularly in other countries. Our books are now in 38 languages, so you can get there. And we'd like to encourage anyone to give it a try. The good thing about publishing, the business peaked out in terms of sales in 2007. We haven't gone back to that level. We won't. But the number of books published is gone up fourfold since 2007. And the reason is a lot of self-publishing. Individuals are publishing them on internet. And a lot of small business presses are still cranking out books. So the market is there. You just got to go for it and make it work. The odds of having a huge seller, you know, a million copies are probably pretty slim, but that's still doable. But you got to start somewhere. Start with one that's going to help your consulting business. And look at that as a lost leader for your consulting business, because it will be.
Well, it would certainly add credibility, I think, because more so than ever before, you're beginning to interact with a prospective client long before you meet them face-to-face, right? They're on the internet. They're looking at your book. They're looking at maybe even talks that you've done, maybe even radio interviews, right? They're vetting you before you ever show up face to face. So I got to think that would be particularly powerful. And if I'm a consultant, for instance, in your network, it certainly can't hurt to say, you know, Jack and I wrote a book,
right?
And there is some of that with you and your network, right?
Exactly. We write articles. I mean, we write books with our own team co-authoring, mm-hmm. and we also write them with some of our key clients. And you've got a client for life if you can co-author a book with them, unless you have a real disagreement during the book.
That's the pearl right there. Right. The client for life, if you author a book with them, that's worth the ticket for admission right there.
Yeah.
Let's get to that person that's just thinking about starting this. They read the book. They say, okay, I'm going to do this. Is their first client the person that they just left the company of, or like how do they get that first client? Do you help them with that?
Well, yeah. Ideally, if you can leverage off your previous relationships, some actually try to consult back with their same organization they used to work with, and that works sometimes because these days
you already have relationships, it's not a brand new, you know, meet you for the first time.
Right. We see some people would say, look, and even propose something to their employer, that why don't I take a severance package because you're reducing your workforce and I can continue to work someone on a contract basis with you. It's cheaper for you and it helps me get started in consulting. And that's a good arrangement. Otherwise, you can work with some colleagues sometimes, and that helps. But get out there. You got to start marketing. And I'd say that this transition, this is a key point here, the transition from corporate work to consulting should begin years before you start the consulting. And so this message would be for people who are thinking about it. So start writing articles. Write your book now. Now's the time to write that book before you actually do this. But write articles, write blogs, speak, getting out. And so that when you do launch the consulting business, you've got some pent-up demand. Now, I'm a very conservative, low-risk-taking individual. And I had already written 3 or 4 books before I started consulting. I got the PhD at the University of Alabama because I thought that would help me. We had written probably close to 100 articles with different magazines, and even took a 3-week leave of absence I was president of a banking network. I took a 3-week leave to go to South Africa to do some consulting because I was invited because of one of our books. I did all of that. But even then, I still waited till a larger bank came along and bought our bank, and they didn't need me anymore. So that took the risk out of it. But I was prepared. We had some pent-up demand. We could hit the ground running quickly, and we did. So my point is prepare for that transition and the transition from corporate life to consulting. Don't wait till it happens to you, or don't wait till you get to that, when I retire, I'll start looking around for this, because it'll take you so long, you get disappointed and perhaps depressed and may run out of money.
So that's great advice, too. if you're interested in buying the book, How to Build a Successful Consulting Practice, don't wait until your severance check arrives. You should be a couple years before is when you get the book. Is that right?
Exactly.
It should be going to this boot camp. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about this boot camp.
We do a boot camp. We do it now with the University of Southern Mississippi on the Gulf Coast. It's actually in Long Beach, Mississippi. We do it there. It's a three-day program. It's actually July the 10th, 11th, and 12th. It basically, in this 3 days, we either talk you out of consulting or you leave saying, I'm going to do it, and you leave with a detailed business plan, a very detailed plan covering 8 or 10, 12 different items, even down to what's my exit strategy coming out of my business, because sometimes they don't think about that. When you start something, you won't think about how will I get out of this, but eventually you will be out of it. So you want to plan that. And so some people make a mistake by saying, I want to be Jack Phillips and Associate. Well, if your exit strategy is to sell it to another company, you've really limited what you can do.
Unless their name's Jack Phillips. Right. It limits the buyers.
He's right. I'm going to find a whole team of Jack Phillips. So, call it something else. The Atlanta Consulting.
Right, because that way company. The person doesn't want, that's great, but I want Jack Phillips. You don't want them to say they want Jack Phillips. You want them to say you want somebody that's an ROI Institute. Right.
And they want that methodology and the structure and the rigor that comes around with
Jack
all
Phillips.
That research.
Exactly. So we have them decide on their exit strategy as part of the business plan. That's the point we're making. When we built our first consulting company, our exit strategy was to sell it to a larger company or to turn it into a publicly traded company through an IPO, initial public offering. So that was our goal. With that in mind, we could plan for that. And we did sell it. The business that we started in 1993, we sold in 1999 for several million dollars. And that was what we had planned. Then we started the one we have now. So in the boot camp, the point is that we really get you prepared for this journey, particularly this transition. So if you're interested, you can come to me directly, and that's jack@roinstitute.net. We'll give you some more information on the boot camp if you're interested. Again, that's the coast of Mississippi. It's in July. We'd love to have you there.
There's probably going to be one of those low country boils.
there you
it
go.
It is. And let me explain that. So it's the shrimp. Oysters, and it's the seafood probably in the low country area, and you boil that. And that's the low country boil, not a turkey.
And it's absolutely delicious, and it has application for any festive occasion.
I did not realize that.
The Day of Thanks. But in this boot camp, you're going to be covering all kinds of topics, everything from considering these issues. And listen, you have been successful. I think if you go and you participate in this boot camp, and you come out of it saying, you know what, this is not for me. I don't want to be a consultant after all. That has been worth the time and energy.
It is. It's probably the best thing financially we could do for you.
Right.
And the stress of the family. We've seen too many people even mortgaging their homes to start the consulting business, only later to have their home foreclosed because they failed at the consulting. That's horrible. That's the worst case. But planning it properly financially, we get into the financial arrangements, we get into the legal structure, we get a lot into the marketing, how you develop a business. It's an important topic and an important step. Now, we have a guaranteed success here. That is, at the end of that 3 days, if you're not satisfied with the weekend, you don't pay nothing. I mean, don't pay anything. So we're trying to guarantee the success of that. But we've had people walk away and say, I'm sorry, I don't want to be a consultant, and you just saved me a lot of money. Thank you. And not asking for a refund. But if anyone gets through that, they can certainly get a refund if they're not happy. So far, no one's asked for that.
That is fantastic. Well, it has been an absolute delight having you come visit with us. I knew it would be. We had so much fun last time. And, yes, we do want to have you come back and maybe invest the entire segment and do maybe a deeper dive on this writing, because all of these things that you mentioned at the top of the hour, the teaching, the speaking, the research, but also the writing, all of these things are so important in developing your consulting practice and ultimately in serving your client. This was fun, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. Enjoyed being here.
So now if they go to your website, www.roiinstitute.net, what will they find there?
Well, it basically talks about our organization and what we do. It's an interesting point to bring up there because you have to dig hard into dig deep into the website to know that we actually provide consulting services. It looks like we're selling certification, which is our way of developing capability of what we're doing, or that we're selling books, as our books. But consulting is really our main business, mm-hmm. and we do that, and it's our main source of revenue. So that's we kind of do that in a direct way. Instead of saying, "Hey, come here, we want to help you, we want to help you," we're basically telling people, look, you don't have to hire a consultant to do what we do, and we'll show you how. We'll teach you how. Well, you come to our certification. You come to certification, you don't really need to hire someone to do what we're teaching you. You can do it yourself, and that's the way we develop capability. But from that group, we still get lots of offers, mm-hmm. lots of consulting. So it really becomes our best market generator. That is, probably 98% of the people go through our 5-day certification become our clients in the consulting arena.
Wow.
So it helps us. So, yes, you can see what we do there in the website. The website, obviously, is a very important part of the consultant's marketing tools these days. So you can see that. You probably won't have much on the consultant's boot camp because it's a small part of what we do, and probably just come to me directly and I can send it to you. There's probably something on the website, but it would be buried so much it would be difficult to see. So come to me directly, jack@roinstitute.net, and we'll get you something about this boot camp. Or about our publications in the consulting arena, or anything else related to that.
Well, I'm delighted to report that 95% of our guests buy us lunch. So
that's how it works.
Let's go do it.
I'll be delighted to do that.
Well, we appreciate you being a guest here today. Jack Phillips, again, roiinstitute.net is the website. There you'll find lots of information about the good work that Jack does every single day. Thank you so much for being part of the show today. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and for all the Business Radio X family. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.